Black History Month is on our minds today. Usually, when we talk about the history of slavery, we talk about it as an evil that we as a nation had to overcome. But in a provocative new book, historian Edward Baptist argues that slavery also made us who we are. The book is called The Half Has Never Been Told: Slavery and the Making of American Capitalism. Steve Paulson caught up with him.
Ed, you make the provocative argument that you really can't explain the rise of the United States as an economic power without slavery, that slavery and capitalism go hand in hand in American history. What's the evidence for this?
Well, the evidence for it is the absolutely central importance of cotton in particular to the development of the American economy. Cotton, which was the most important commodity on the world market for much of the 19th century, was something that the U.S. absolutely dominated production of by 1820 or 1830. We were sort of like the OPEC contained in one border.
So in other words, it wasn't cotton. Just cotton being consumed in the United States. It was cotton consumed in Europe as well, mostly came from the United States. Produced by slave labor.
Right. And this was absolutely crucial to American development because it allowed not just cotton planters, cotton merchants and the bankers who lent them money. It certainly allowed them to prosper, but it allowed all sorts of other industries and economic endeavors to build, as it were, on the back of that bridge of cotton that was flowing across the Atlantic.
So you're saying slavery was not only important in the South, but also to northern states that had no slaves.
Absolutely crucial, In fact, we can see it as absolutely central to the development of northern industry. The first northern industry is cotton mills that spin and weave cotton. And then the second round of northern industrial development is to a large extent premised on either supporting those cotton mills, so you have machine shops and so on that develop, or on the other hand, selling products, industrially made products, to the South to be used in further expanding the production of cotton. So cotton gins and other sorts of consumer products that are sold to enslavers, but also to enslaved people as well, including even ready-made clothes. The enslaved people are one of the first markets for ready-made shoes and clothes in the United States. And so they get that industry off the ground too.
So cotton was hugely important to 19th century industrial production. That's not quite the same thing as saying that slavery, based on the cotton industry, is what made capitalism go.
That's a great point. By the 1850s, there were many abolitionists who claimed free labor production of cotton would actually be more efficient than slave production of cotton. The problem with that argument is that cotton is very labor intensive. Before the invention of machines to pick cotton, people didn't want to do this labor, but enslaved people can be made to pick cotton faster and faster all the time. Southern slave owners prove this. They increased the intensity of slave labor continuously, and the productivity of slave labor increased 400% from 1800 to 1860. And this is why the American South dominated world production of cotton in the 1850s.
Now, was that because technology had increased the ability to pick cotton faster?
Depends on what you call a technology. What enslavers did was they continually monitored the picking of enslaved people. They made them pick all day long at a high rate of speed, and then they weighed and measured how much they'd picked and compared it to previous performance. And if it was below the quota that had been established for that individual, and you actually see a great example of this in the film 12 Years a Slave, which is drawn from the memoirs of someone who survived the cotton field. So it's pretty real. If they met that quota, then they were fine. They could go home and go to bed. But if they hadn't met that quota, they would be whipped. And sometimes the equation was very clear. 1 pound of cotton under the quota, one lash. 10 pounds under, 10 lashes. And then over time, the quota for an individual would be raised. And this is the real story behind the increase of 400% in the productivity of cotton pickers.
So you're saying that the reason why productivity rose, I mean, cotton picking became more productive, was because of beatings. I mean, what you call torture. I mean, you use that word.
Well, I think it's the right word to use. I think we'd use it if it was being applied in virtually any other context. Let's say prisoner of war camps where American prisoners of war were being held. We would have no question that this was torture. We would absolutely call beatings with brutal lashes and various kinds of torture involving water and imprisonment and boxes and things like this, with the whole roster of tortures that we see in the 20th and 21st century and that the UN has no trouble identifying as torture. These took place on slave labor camps in the American South. And these, when combined with measurement and this gradual increase in the quota that individuals face, these are what ultimately lift production. Now, enslaved people have to figure out how to pick faster and faster, and they do, but it's a great struggle, as many of them report in their memoirs.
Now, I want to come back to this link between slavery and capitalism because, I mean, it seems counterintuitive. I mean, it would seem like slavery is exactly the kind of economic institution that is not part of the capitalist system. I mean, these are workers who operated outside of the wage system.
Yeah. Some of our most famous definitions of capitalism assume that the wage labor system is central and sometimes assume that it's the only real feature of capitalism, whether we're talking about classical Marxism or classical liberal economics like you would see with Adam Smith. But the funny thing is, in human history, capitalism never seems to have existed without a substantial component of forced labor and kinds of labor extraction that are, you know, pretty close to slavery.
I mean, this is really a radical argument that you're making. I mean, it's not just you. I know there are other historians who say this as well,
right,
that essentially that slavery was fundamental to the rise of the United States as a superpower.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we've historians in general have come to accept that slaveholding and the power of enslavers was in some way sort of baked into the original political recipe of the United States. But I think that arguing that it's crucial to the economic development is something that only recently historians in general have been able to make really coherent, compelling arguments about.
So what changes if we really understand the centrality of slavery in American history? Why does this history matter?
Well, I would like to think that we'd move towards a reckoning with the racial wealth inequities, certainly, in the United States, and move towards an understanding of the ways in which, on the one hand, slavery creates long-term African-American poverty by systematically transferring wealth for generations away from African-Americans and continuing to do so after slavery is over. And on the other hand, an understanding that slavery creates long-term white wealth, and not just for the wealthiest whites and not just for Southern whites either.
But slavery was abolished a long time ago.
Yeah. And if you think about it, if I was retiring today at the age of 65, the most crucial dollars I would have put away would be those I put away between, let's say, 25 and 35. Because they would have had time to accumulate and build up and so on and so forth. And that's what white wealth is like, even for those who have immigrated a little bit later, because they were able to get opportunities that simply were denied to African Americans. Those opportunities were there because of the accumulation of white wealth. And on the other hand, African Americans, among our earliest immigrants, have been systematically denied that.
I want to ask you one other question about the meaning of this kind of history that you're telling us. I mean, the whole notion that our rise to superpower status here in the United States is because of slavery. I mean, because of this horrible thing that went on for centuries. What does that mean for us? I mean, as Americans, to think about our identity if we really understand that history.
The meaning of that depends at least to some extent on who we choose to identify with. When we look back in the 1830s and 40s, and it's easy for us to look back and say, oh, I would have been an abolitionist, or, oh, I would have been a runaway from slavery. But in reality, in different ways, both those identities were very, very difficult to maintain. I think if you look back at that history, U.S. history looks very different. And it certainly looks more tragic, more violent, and more like a long process of theft, as it would also if we look at that history from the perspective of Native Americans. But at the same time, there are also these incredible triumphs that are, you know, that much greater because of the place that they come from. So Union victory with emancipation and the citizenship of African Americans as one of the products, well, that's a pretty incredible achievement in human history. It's something that a formerly enslaved person, a man who was serving in the Union Army, said when he saw his former owner being marched away after one of the final battles of the Civil War. He said, hey, master, probably with some sarcasm in the voice, bottom rail on the top this time.
Edward Baptist talking with Steve Paulson about his book, The Half Has Never Been Told, Slavery and the Making of American Capitalism. Baptist is a historian at Cornell University.